This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. By the 1950s, anyone who knew anything about music knew who Jamie Bernstein's father was. But she didn't find out that she was the child of the man they called the savior of the American musical until she was in school. These days, Jamie spends much of her time keeping her father's legacy alive. This weekend, she joins the North Carolina Symphony under the direction of Sarah Hicks in a celebration of Leonard Bernstein's Broadway musicals. The concert will feature four vocalists interspersed with narration by Jamie Bernstein. And Jamie joins us now by phone from New York City. Welcome to The State of Things.
Thank you very much. Hello.
Hello. And you were just a small child when your father was already a famous composer. How did you find out that he was well known?
Oh, well, one hint was when my friend Lisa in second grade called me famous father girl. That was kind of a clue.
Yeah.
And then the penny really dropped for my brother and me. My sister hadn't been born yet. But my brother and I figured it out when we were watching the Flintstones, and Wilma and Betty were going to the Holly Rock Bowl to hear Leonard Bernstein conduct. Then we really knew that.
You knew something was going to
happen. Big time.
Did you run around and say, well, what's this all about? How come you're on the Flintstones?
Well, I guess, by the time I was 5 years old, my father was doing his young people's concerts with the New York Philharmonic on television. So when you see your dad on TV, you start to get an idea that maybe people have heard of him.
What was it like growing up with Leonard as a father?
It was not boring. Never boring. It was really a very exciting time looking back on it. And our family was very warm and affectionate, and our mother had a wonderful eye for design, so our house was beautiful, and the food was delicious, and the house was always full of friends and family. Everybody loved to come over and eat and make a big noise and have fun, and the grown-ups would sing around the piano until really late at night. That's what I thought grown-ups did, you know?
Did he share his music with you, the stuff he was working on, as part of a family collaboration, or did he kind of have to hole up in his cell when he was doing that?
Well, there was plenty of holing up in his cell, of course, but he liked to share, and when we got older, old enough to, you know, appreciate what he was doing, he would run back into the living room at just before dinner time and say, listen to this, and plunk his latest thing on the piano and play us what he'd been working on. So that was very exciting.
Give us a brief idea now about this concert featuring the Broadway music of Leonard Bernstein this weekend with the North Carolina Symphony. What are we going to hear?
Oh, this is a great concert. It's one of my favorites. As most people may know, my father wrote Broadway shows and he wrote symphonic music. But much of his Broadway music is very adaptable to a symphony orchestra situation. And he adapted a lot of the dance music from his shows into orchestral arrangements that you can hear in a concert hall. So we do some of that. And then in addition, we have the four wonderful singers who are going to be singing numbers from the shows as well, well as the dance music. So it's a very lively, propulsive, and lovely combination of music.
I have to say, I think the most famous of the Broadway musicals was The West Side Story, a retelling of Romeo and Juliet that gave us this song, Tonight, Tonight.
Tonight, tonight, the world is full of light, with suns and moons all
it's interesting because we think we know everything we need to know about that musical and about the story it came from, but you have a story about the West Side Story and how it came to be. Apparently, Jerome Robbins' original idea involved not sharks and jets, but Jews and Catholics?
That is correct. That was the first idea, and it never quite gelled. The idea was that the Jews and the Catholics would come to a big disagreement and a sort of outburst over the Easter and Passover holidays, you see. Hmm. And somehow that idea was just not firing them up. And it wasn't until Jerry Robbins had this idea of using a Puerto Rican street gang that my father kind of perked up and said, oh, now I know what to do.
It was interesting. I mean, he was having a hard time actually writing the music for this kind of religious friction, right?
Well, yeah, it just somehow it wasn't. It was musically not speaking to him until the Latin ingredient was introduced, and then suddenly he knew what to do.
Now, West Side Story obviously enjoyed a very popular embrace when it came out of the 1950s. It became a popular film. Not all of your father's work enjoyed that same reception at the time. I mean, Candide, I think, is one example. When it came out, critics didn't seem to get it.
Candide is a very different creature from West Side Story, although they were written sort of simultaneously, which I can hardly believe. And there's even a little cross-pollination. Some material that was written for one show wound up in the other, even though Candide, which is based on Voltaire's novella from the 18th century, would seem to have nothing at all to do with West Side Story. And yet some of the music went back and forth.
Oh, well, I want to hear a little bit of that now. This from Candide, Glitter and Be Gay.
Glitter and Be Gay.
A little bit of Glitter and Be Gay from Candide, written by Leonard Bernstein. His daughter, Jamie Bernstein, is on the phone with us from New York. She'll be at the Progress Energy Center this weekend with the North Carolina Symphony for a production of Broadway songs written by Leonard Bernstein. Tell us about that. Tell us about that show a little bit, about the heroine in Candide.
Oh, well, the part of her big number that you were just playing from Glitter and Be Gay is actually a sort of fireworks number where you just can't believe the pyrotechnics that the soprano goes through. She hits these crazy high notes, and it's a kind of a real showstopper, actually. And I'm happy to report that our soprano, Michelle Arezaga, is going to sing Glitter and Be Gay in our concert. And wait till you hear her sing that song. She just brings the house down.
What do you think it was about that show that audiences and critics... they certainly didn't seem to embrace it at the time, but it's enjoyed a bit of a revival now. What is it that we understand about that show that eluded them perhaps the first time?
Oh, well, the story behind the creation of Candide is rather complex, and I won't tell it here, but they had a lot of problems with what is known as the book, which is how they told the story and the dialogue and how the whole story was organized. And there were a lot of different collaborators who came and went over the years. But the one thing that everybody could agree on is that the score was fantastic. And since there was a cast album released, the cast album from the original Broadway production became a kind of cult favorite. And that's what kept Candide alive. And then over the decades, there have been many other versions of Candide that have been created and have had a much greater success than the original version.
Another of the enduring classics, of course, is On the Town. And we've got a little bit of New York, New York. This went on to be a film starring Frank Sinatra and Gene Kelly. It's not the New York, New York that you're thinking of, though. Let's listen.
Broadway lights, but we've hair on our chests, so what we like the best are the nights.
Sidelight sacks, New York, New York, a hell of a town. The Bronx is up, but the battery's down.
Now, there's another song. Again, we are familiar with that one, although it's not the sort of the classic that ended every disco night in the 1980s of Frank Sinatra. What do you think about that music? Because it does endure, I think, in the American catalog. What keeps this music alive?
Well, I think it's the rhythm myself. I mean, it has great, great tunes. But for me, the thing about my father's music that makes it so irresistible is that you pretty much cannot sit still when you're listening to it. It's so propulsive and so catchy, and it just seems to be dancing for you all the time and makes you want to kind of get up and dance with it.
Your father, very passionate about teaching. You talked about the young people's concerts that he performed, those televised concerts. did he succeed in imbuing you and saturating you with the same love of music that he obviously had?
I guess he succeeded in making my brother and sister and me all big music fans. None of us is actually a professional musician, but we all adore music and kind of have it in our lives all the time. And so it's a real pleasure for all of us to help the world know about our dad's music and to share it with everybody and to introduce new audiences to it as well.
Did you at some point in your life decide or ever think that you might have a career in music?
Actually, I did pursue it for quite a while. I was a singer-songwriter and I went out to L.A. back in the 80s and I made a record and all of that. But then when I got married and started having my family, I just decided it was one thing too many. And besides, I was very insecure about the whole thing. But when nobody's looking, I still write songs.
Still write and perform. When you think about that era in American history and American music, when a lot of people, a broad audience, could come together around a body of music, we don't seem to have that today when somebody considered a classical composer or conductor could actually write popular song. That seems to be a little surprising these days. It shouldn't be. Music is music. What do you think has changed?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, in the 20th century, we had two great American composers who crossed over between popular music and the concert hall, and they were my dad and George Gershwin. And looking back on it, I think we were really lucky to have two of them in the 20th century. I think it was pretty unusual in both cases. I don't know why it should be so difficult for people to pull down those barriers and go back and forth. But evidently, it doesn't happen very often.
Well, it's kind of an interesting thing that the mixed bag seems to be that now people have greater access to music. Musicians themselves have greater access to their audience. They don't have to go through record companies. And yet that seems to have fragmented the audience rather than brought people together in an odd way. It seems kind of baffling in a way.
It is baffling. And it's true that everybody can be so specific about what they like to listen to that it's just niche after niche after niche, and it seems like everybody's getting more and more broken down into little corners.
You've been very involved in preserving your father's legacy. How about your siblings? Are they involved as well?
Oh, very much so, both of them. My brother in particular is very involved in my father's educational legacy. There is a program, actually a teaching model called Artful Learning, and the Leonard Bernstein Artful Learning Method uses the arts to teach the entire curriculum, and there are lots and lots of schools all over the country that use this Artful Learning Method, and it's fantastic. The schools love it, the teachers love it, the kids love it, everybody loves it.
Yeah, and also you recently begun a documentary project on the system known as El Sistema USA. We actually have a version of that called Kids Notes right here in Durham.
Yes, I know Katie Wyatt very well.
And it's become a fabulous success in this area. Tell us about the documentary and whether or not this idea, El Sistema, which began in Latin America, in a sense carries on your father's legacy and his work.
Yes. Well, when I first found out about El Sistema and saw the conductor Gustavo Dudamel conducting the mambo from West Side Story with this youth orchestra from Venezuela, I pretty much fell off my chair when I saw this YouTube video. I was so excited, and I just thought, where is my dad to see what is happening in Venezuela and these amazing kids who are coming out of it and this program that has literally hundreds of thousands of kids playing music in orchestras all over Venezuela. Now it's going global. El Sistema is all over the world, and it's starting in the United States as well. Katie Wyatt is starting one pod down there in North Carolina, and up here we have a pod in Philadelphia, and that's the one that I'm making my film about.
Are there people on the scene today, on the American music scene today, that you think could bring people together musically? You mentioned certainly your father, Gershwin, and others. Are there movements, are there kinds of music, either here or worldwide, that you see more or less bringing people together?
Well, again, I would go back and say that El Sistema, this Venezuelan orchestral training model, is creating new audiences on a vast new level. And their conductor, the conductor who came through this program called Gustavo Dudamel, who conducts the LA Philharmonic now, he is really doing a lot to introduce new audiences to classical music. And he also loves opera and he loves musical theater. So I think that Gustavo himself will go far in in expanding audiences for all these kinds of music.
How about your father? How would you describe his legacy?
Whoa, that's a big question. Well, his legacy, as the further away we get from the 20th century, the more he seems to glow as someone who introduced and caused thousands and thousands of people to fall in love with music, all kinds of music. And nobody is going to forget him or his music anytime soon, I don't think.
Jamie, thank you so much for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Jamie Bernstein, daughter of composer Leonard Bernstein. She's going to be narrating performances of her father's Broadway songs performed by the North Carolina Symphony this weekend. Performances are Friday and Saturday at May Mandy Concert Hall in Raleigh's Progress Energy Center at 8 o'clock. Thanks for listening to The State of Things. If you want to comment about the show or hear an archived edition of past programs, our website is stateofthings.org, and you can find us on Facebook as well. Our program is produced by Amber Nimix, Alex Granados, and Isaac Davey Aronson. Jenny Mueller is our intern. Robin Copley, our technical director. Managing editor Lindsay Foster Thomas. Susan Davis is our senior producer. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacia.